people forget or don't realize that ticket prices are set by how much the band needs. If the band needs $250,000 or $100,000, mm-hmm. doesn't matter what it is.
You divide.
We have to figure out how much the ticket price could be so we don't get killed, or if it sells out, make a few bucks.
Welcome to ProCo 360. ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado is a show about entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. My guests know that business in Colorado is special. Past shows, my Audible book list, and subscriber info is available at ProCo360.com. Again, that's ProCo360.com. In this episode, I'll be speaking with a music promotions legend in Colorado, Chuck Morris, president and CEO of the Rocky Mountain region of AEG Live. In Colorado, the company books the Bluebird Theater, the Ogden Theater, the Gothic Theater, Red Rocks, and the Pepsi Center. I'm going to try to stay focused on the business of live acts, but I'm counting on Chuck to sprinkle some stories into the show about the acts and people he's met along the way, and I know he's planning to. Aren't you, Chuck? Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
So we're going to dive in a moment. First,
I want to thank Fiddler's Green too.
Fiddler's Green, of course you did, and that's a fabulous venue. We'll talk about that. So let me thank first our show sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado. They go big for small business. They've been committed to this show since it started, demonstrating their love for entrepreneurs. Also, MicroStar Keg Logistics. These guys are entrepreneurs for beer entrepreneurs. MicroStar is a Colorado-based company that helps craft brewers expand by handling the logistics of keg distribution. Okay, Chuck Morris of AEG Live, you ready?
Absolutely.
Okay, and normally, it's funny, normally I start by asking my guests about their business, but in your case, a legend in your industry. Let's start with your background, how you got where you are now, kind of that two-minute overview of how you got here.
Grew up in New York City, graduated from Queens College in political science at 20 years old, got a partial scholarship to come out to CU to get my PhD in poli-sci, but always my first love was music. We went up every summer. My father was a school teacher. We went up every summer to Lake Chautauqua, New York, where he was a counselor, and the whole family went up, and they had a pop series and a symphony and ballet and all these other things, and I started going to concerts there. Fell in love with music. My first show was the Kingston Trio when I was 10 years old in 1955 at Lake Chautauqua. Bought a four-string tenor guitar like Nick Reynolds from the band, started playing instruments, bought every record I could find. But I also loved government, politics, and did very well in school. As I said, I graduated at 20, came out to Boulder to go to school, and after 2 years going for a doctorate, I was a TA at 21, decided I was gonna try to go into the music business, which was my first love. Dropped out of graduate school, to the chagrin of my parents, and got a break. I was friendly with the owner of the Sink, a guy named Herbie Cavara. I used to go have a beer with him after I left Norland Library at 11:30 studying. And one day I said I had dropped out of school and wanted to do something with music, with people. And he said, my manager of the Sink just quit yesterday. Why don't you manage the Sink?
Oh, what a great coincidence.
I've never had a business class. He said, Chuck, you're really bright. People, I could tell you get along with people. You'd make a great manager. So I started managing the Sink. At that point, it was one of the biggest 3-2 bars in the state. Mm-hmm. Started booking local bands like Flash Cadillac, who became big, and Tommy Bolin. And 2 years later, the Sink was at its heyday. I convinced Herbie that I didn't have any money to go buy a bankrupt Talagi's in 1970 and make it a national rock place. There was none in Denver, none in Boulder. We opened, and in Talagi's, in a matter of 3-4 years, we had everybody in blues from John Lee Hooker to Muddy Waters to Lightning Hopkins to Mance Lipscomb to Big Mama Thornton. In folk, we had the Dirt Band and Tom Rush and Tim Harden and Phil Oakes and blah, blah, blah. In rock, we had Bonnie Raitt, ZZ Top, the Doobies. Decided if I wanted to get big, I may have to go into business with a guy named Barry Fay, because a lot of the bands I had first, when they got bigger, they played for him. And I felt maybe, and I had never met him, we fought over the phone, and I decided if I wanted to get bigger, maybe I ought to make a deal with him. And I called him, didn't think he'd take my phone call, and said, I can't swear, but I love Barry. I mean, he's the best man at two of my weddings, but he took my call, and he said, what the you want? And I said, you know, I'm this young kid who has this really successful club and there's no club in Denver. And I'm thinking about leaving and maybe do something with you. And he said, I'll come up tomorrow night and talk about it.
Wow.
Came up, said I was the best young club guy he had ever seen. Said, find a club in Denver and we'll open it. And we found a club called Marvelous Marv's. We bought it, we were partners, and I opened it, changed the name, fixed it up. It was called Ebbets Field because I grew up in Brooklyn, right near the baseball park. Ebbets Field, and in Ebbets Field, which was Billboard Club of the Year, we had everybody from Ry Cooder to Randy Newman to every act in the world played there.
How'd you make money back then on, in a club? Was it by
very
booze?
Little.
Really?
It was only, well, Ebbets Field was only 260 seats. And, but it helped develop my relationship with bands. With, you know, we had the first tour of Lynyrd Skynyrd, of Marshall Tucker, of Dan Fogelberg, of Jimmy Buffett.
Were you paying the bands then?
A lot, yes.
Did they, I mean, were you paying them well, or how did they get paid? Was it a percentage of the take, or how did that work?
It was very interesting. Not like today where bands and agents have their own marketing people. They check everything we do, look over every expense. Yeah. In those days, they would get, like, I had the Doobie Brothers at Tulagi's for five nights, and it was 2,500 versus 50% of the door. And it was really simple.
Yeah.
It's changed dramatically. And but bands have always made a big chunk of the money from clubs and theaters. And, you know, you really, in our business, you have to make it in other ways. And if you lived on just what you made from the band at the door, you'd never stay in business.
Right, right. So so continue your story about, so you, after Ebbets Field.
Ebbets Field had a big four-year run, and Faeline, I was working as, Barry was sort of my silent partner, and Faeline was getting really big. You know, Barry was starting to do the Stones in a bunch of markets and the Who and people like that, and asked me to sell the club and become his number, you know, right-hand guy. So we sold the club, and I became the number two guy at Faeline for 10 years and was, you know, the guy behind the guy. And in 86, I started managing a bunch of bands, including the Dirt Band and Leo Kottke and a young kid named Lyle Lovett. And then I signed Big Head Todd, some of them while I was the number two guy at Faye. And I was getting a little burnt out by promoting and decided I was going to leave Faye and just manage bands. And Barry had a new partner then named Michael Cole, who became a partner of his, and he asked me to stay on part-time to book bands that I was close with, but I was doing really well in management. And then I did that for 10 years, and when Barry decided he was retiring, I decided I've always been the number two promoter in this town. I'd go back to promoting my own company and call my friends at Bill Graham Presents. Bill had already died, but the guys who were under him, a guy named Greg Kirilloff, who was sort of like he was to Bill that I was to Barry. I called him and I said I wanted to start a promoting company. And he said, Chuck, I never wanted to come to Denver because we never wanted to screw around with you and Faye. And he's retiring and you're interested. I'll be on a plane tomorrow. He came in, we made a deal, and I started Chuck Morris, Bill Graham Presents. Built the Fillmore. My idea was to buy Mammoth Gardens, and they owned the brand name since Bill built Fillmore East and Fillmore West, which is still around. And ran that company, owned part of it. We sold it to SFX, which sold it to Clear Channel, which spun off to Live Nation. I continued with the same people running the whole thing. And then my old friend Phil Anschutz came to me 11 years ago, who I've known and have been a good friend of the whole family and a big fan of his. AEG was exploding around the world and asked me when my contract was up and if I'd join him. And I couldn't resist, and we started AEG for this part of the country 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've...
That was quick.
And yeah, well, that was. And most recently, you've been working on sort of a labor of love, a new album, Dan Fogelberg songs.
Yeah, I was real friendly with Dan, who lived, if people remember, in Boulder for a while, and then Pagosa Springs, died tragically at 54 from prostate cancer. I did a million shows with him. We were friends. One of my best friends is a guy named Irving Azoff, who has been his manager his whole career. They grew up together. Irving moved to L.A. with Dan, managing him, and then signed the Eagles, who he still manages, and a bunch of other people. And Irving and Gene Fogelberg, his widow, started working on a tribute album that was going to go for prostate cancer research. And they both called me and asked if I would help get some artists and help co-produce the record, which I have. And we've been working on it for 5 years, and it comes out this week. Well, it is an amazing record. It's 13 Dan Fogelberg songs.
Oh, I know you're looking at your notes because they're amazing artists are singing all of the Dan Fogelberg songs,
and,
right?
Yeah, it's a labor of love. It may be the best, most exciting thing I've ever done. Mm. And no one got paid. The artists just played for...
List some of the artists.
Garth Brooks, the last recording of Donna Summer, Michael McDonald, a duet with Vince Gill and Amy Grant, Train, Randy Owens from Alabama, a duet with Richie Furey and the Dirt Band, Boss Skaggs, Jimmy Buffett, the Zac Brown Band, and Joe Walsh from Most of the
Eagles. Did you work with all of those folks?
Oh, I've known all of them. Wow. Yeah, and got many of them to do their... And it was really easy because they were all fans of Dan.
Well, Gene Fogelberg, Dan Fogelberg's wife, said some really wonderful things. She gives you great credit. She said that Chuck's natural exuberance and excitement for the project gave us a much needed shot in the arm. That has to be a gratifying thing to hear.
I think the proudest thing I am, and I'm proud of everything, you know, getting the Dirt Band to do a duet with their friends, Richie Furey. But we thought the album was going to come out like 3 years ago, and it took a lot of time to get artists to record. But I called our buddy Zac Brown to do leader of the band, and he turned out he loved Dan Fogelberg.
Wow.
And wanted to do leader of the band, and this was 3 years ago, and we thought the album was gonna come out a year later. And he said, Chuck, I'm so busy with making records and touring, I don't think I'll have time to record a song. And I said, well, this is 4 years ago. I said, why don't you, we had three nights sold out at Red Rocks. I said, why don't you learn the song and do it live, and we'll record it.
Huh?
And he did it live, never played it before, and murdered the place. And the live recording from Red Rocks is on the album, and it's brilliant.
Oh my gosh, what a tremendous story. Winnell, I also promised to let you plug the upcoming Jazz Masters induction ceremony that's coming up.
And you know, I'm chairman of the board of the Colorado Music Hall of Fame that we started.
And that's at your new facility out in Broomfield, right?
No, that was moved. We were at the Trading Post next to Red Rocks.
That's right.
And we've had seven inductions. Started off with John Denver. We had an induction class of the Dirt Band, Poco, Firefall, and Stephen Stills and Manassas, all from here. We had we inducted the late Glenn Miller, and we booked the Glenn Miller Orchestra, which still, you know, he died during World War II, but his orchestra still tours. We booked them and did it at the Glenn Miller Ballroom because, you know, he grew up here, went to CU, so we had that. And also Lanny Garrett was inducted that night, wonderful.
Oh, she's awesome.
He's had such a great career here.
Tell us about the jazz induction coming up, the Jazz Masters induction.
Yeah, we like to have classes of same kind of music, and we're having a show at the Paramount to induct some of the great jazz musicians.
Chuck's pulling out a poster here that I'm looking at across the desk.
For those of you who don't know, three of the guys from Denver joined Earth, Wind & Fire, 1972. Philip Bailey, who became one of the main lead singers, is still in the band. Larry Dunn and Andrew Wolfick, who went to East High School, all three of them. Andrew and Larry retired, but Philip is still the lead singer in Earth, Wind. They're getting inducted, in fact, and Andrew's had a stroke, so won't be able to perform, but Philip and Larry are gonna perform. They grew up here. They went to East High School. Philip was born in Denver General Hospital. And we're inducting them. We're inducting Diane Reeves, who's going to play with her band, who's from Denver, went to East for 2 years, and then George Washington, Bill Frisell, and Ron Miles.
You know, and when is this?
This is going to be on the 28th of November.
Excellent.
2 weeks,
coming up. 2 weeks. So depending on you're listening, we are going to release this podcast quickly so that the listeners can have a chance to participate.
We're also inducting Charles Burrell, who's a 96-year-old, very famous musician who's still alive, and was the first black player in the Denver Symphony and has played with all sorts of famous jazz musicians. And we're inducting East High School because so many artists have gone there, including many of these, Judy Collins, a bunch of rock bands.
That's so great. I hope to be able to see you there.
Yeah, it's gonna be a great show. And it's gonna be hosted by Mayor Webb, who's been friendly with all those artists.
Sure.
And Carlos Landau of the Jazz Station's gonna host it. And all of our inductions, in case you've gone, the last one we did at Fiddler's with 17,000 people. We inducted Dan Fogelberg and some of the artists from the album played. We inducted Caribou Ranch, the famous recording studio, Jim Gersio's studio, and had artists that recorded their play. And then we inducted Joe Walsh and Barnstorm, which started in Boulder, if you didn't know that. And he got the band back together after 44
Excellent.
Years.
Well, I'm going to remind our listeners that you're listening to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is a show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with Chuck Morris, president and CEO of AEG Live Rocky Mountain. Let's switch gears a little bit, because I do want to talk about the business of music.
Absolutely.
And I know you got some great stories. You've already been weaving some of those in. One of my biggest curiosities, and this was not in my outline, but it's coming up because you mentioned the Eagles, you mentioned Earth, Wind, and Fire. The bands that have come out of the 70s and 80s that are still performing, still touring, what's that whole business model about? Are they trying to make a living? Are they just having fun? Are they making money? How does that work?
It's interesting. A lot of the older bands are doing better than they've ever done.
Financially.
In every way. Some of that old music is just as strong as ever. You got bands like the Eagles, of course, with who I've done from, they played their second show ever at my first club, Tulagi's, before they even made their first album. But, you know, they took off 14 years when they broke up from 1980 to 1994, and then came back and were bigger than life. And then, of course, Glenn Frey died tragically, but they put together all the other guys and added Glenn's son. And Vince Gill, the country star, was a great singer and guitar player. And in fact, I went to their first show at Dodger Stadium, and they were amazing. And they're playing some dates, and they're going to play next summer. And
so how does... we can use them, or we can use another band as an example, but how does the money work? How does the business work when you're a continuing to tour band like the Eagles? How do they get paid, and who makes the money on the tickets and all that?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. The main thing about our business is, in the old days, people sold a lot of records.
Right, that whole thing is flipped.
A lot of money from albums, and a lot of bands toured so they can sell albums and get airplay, where if they wrote the songs, they'd sell more albums, but B, they'd make money from publishing. And they really toured in the old days so they could make a lot of money from album sales and songwriting. And today, with albums totally gone down to almost nothing except for a few superstars, they basically make about 90-95% of their money on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I never thought in the old days, in the 70s and 80s, as a promoter, first as a club owner, then promoting bigger shows, that I would outlast my friends in the record business and some radio people and newspaper people. They were doing a lot better sometimes than some struggling promoters like myself at times. But these days, live music, you can't replace that.
Yeah.
And we're having some wonderful years. Live music is as strong as ever.
Well, when you say they're doing better, a group like the Eagles or
Doobie Brothers,
they're filling a place like the Fiddler's Green, and they're partnering up.
Well, the Eagles do a bit bigger than that, but yeah.
So people are buying tickets for $75 or whatever they are. How much of that money goes to the Eagles? Are they making a great living now financially?
Yes.
These kind of bands?
Actually, it's always been the case as a promoter or a club owner that the bands make most of the money at what we call at the door from ticket sales. Promoters make very little of that. Really, to survive, you really have to make money. The best thing is to own your own building. So you get food and beverage and all the other parking and all the other
incomes. Really? And that's the model, is you use bands to attract ancillary sales, and that's how you make your money?
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, we sometimes rent buildings and make money, but it's much tougher.
But you're not splitting the take.
Well, the band makes most of it at the door, but you know, AEG's philosophy is to build beautiful buildings and the bands will come. You know, we have the Sprint Center in Kansas City, we have the O2 in London, we have the Mercedes Center in Berlin.
Are bands attracted to Red Rocks, right?
But absolutely.
Otherwise, does the attractiveness of the venue make a difference to the band, or is it more
absolutely.
Just really?
Well, I had this dream for a long time to take over Fiddler's Green, which was really
what a great
beautiful
venue.
But for years had not people around it did not put any money into it, and it was falling apart, and I wanted to take it over. And we did 5 years ago when that contract was up, and we put a bunch of millions into it, and we rebuilt every building, and we're doing great. We did 31 shows last summer, and they used to do 10 or 11.
Yeah. I've been there and since it was redone, and it's a whole different feel.
And we've had people like Dave Matthews there, and the Foo Fighters, and the Dixie Chicks reunion, and some of the biggest acts, Boston, and it's been great.
So what don't most customers and business people not see or appreciate about the whole model of that live acts business?
You know, the biggest thing that first of all, I'm blessed that I made a living out of this for 47, 48 years, so I can't complain about anything. I thought I would do this for 6 months and then go back to graduate school and get my PhD. And that was 48 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I'm blessed. I'm not complaining about anything at all. I'm so lucky that I do something I love. But I think if I had one thing that people misunderstand, we've always through the years had complaints about ticket prices being high. But people forget or don't realize that ticket prices are set by how much the band needs. If the band needs $250,000, or 100, mm-hmm. doesn't matter what mm-hmm. it is.
You divide.
We have to figure out how much the ticket price could be so we don't get killed, or if it sells out, make a few bucks. So most of the time, that ticket is based on what the band needs, but most of the time, the promoter gets a lot of the heat about it, but we really don't have that much control over it.
That's interesting. I want to talk about, you know, the acts that come to mind when you think about this whole business of making a living doing live performances. Who comes to mind who was incredibly successful financially, not because they were a huge name, but like they actually managed their business in a way that made them successful?
Well, the ones I'm thinking about are both a huge name and a great business people. And probably of all the artists, and I've done, God, Red Rocks alone, I've done 1,600 shows, but one of the great businessmen and great musicians in my world is a guy named Jimmy Buffett, who's not only made money touring for so long and still does great business, but you know, he's got a line of clothing, he's got restaurants in the Keys, he's done so many other things, and he's a brilliant businessman. The other guy that's done so well outside of music itself is a guy named Sammy Hagar.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Who's done, alcohol stuff and all sorts of stuff that has done really, really well.
Going back to Jimmy Buffett, he doesn't strike one as you look at his concert. Doesn't look like he's thinking business. How does he balance sort of his creative and fun-loving side with his business persona?
Well, I can't talk for Jamie at all. I've known him forever. He played for me one of his first dates, Endeavor, at Ebbets Field with the Coral Reefers in 73, I think it was. And, he lived in Aspen for a while. We became great friends because I managed the Dirt Band, who all lived us for 27 years, and they all lived up there. So, I got to know Jimmy really well on a personal level. He manages to do it. When he gets on stage, it's the Parrotheads, and he has the greatest time in the world, and that's what makes him a great live act and keeps his fans coming. As a businessman, he's brilliant.
Yeah. Have you noticed that as bands mature, that the way they think about their finances, the way they manage their business changes?
No.
Really?
I have found that the bands that start off thinking about it usually get better at it, and the bands that don't think about it don't usually change.
Wow.
And I've known some very, very wealthy artists that have done very well with their money, and some that are, don't have a pot to piss
that's
in.
So well.
I'm sorry about swearing there.
That's all right. Hey, I'm going to make a decision on the fly here for my listeners. I'm going to turn my interview with Chuck Morris into two segments. I'm going to wrap the first one up now. And when we come back for the second part of my conversation with Chuck Morris, we're going to talk about industry trends, about the operations and running of a company like AEG Live. But I'm going to wrap up this segment by saying that I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and today I'm ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I've been speaking with Chuck Morris, president and CEO of AEG Live, the company that, perhaps the man responsible responsible for booking acts into many of Colorado's best-known venues, including Red Rocks, the Bluebird, Pepsi Center, and many more. Thanks for joining me for this portion of the show, Chuck.
My pleasure.
And this is, again, Dave Tabor. Thanks again to show sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and Jones & Keller. Thanks to my producer, Luke Woodruff. This show and past shows are available at proco360.com. Go there to subscribe. And again, that's proco360.com. Thanks for listening for this portion, and I hope you'll check out segment 2 with Chuck Morris.